married even Govindanandani Prabhuji, so...
Devasis Saha also you can try, he sometime attends.
Yes, Prabhuji. Prabhuji, you can request them via chat that I'm calling them...
I already like sent one, you know, message.
Yeah, Prabhuji.
I will mute my mic so I cannot speak.
Okay.
Only if...
Because I don't understand. You don't record the noise.
Okay.
Thank you. To leave your voicemail, press 1. To listen to it, press 2. To re-record it, press 3. If you don't want to leave a voicemail, press 6.
Somewhere it is coming. Auto voice is coming.
You're recording a voicemail.
To it's leave... Priyata, sir. Even Murali Krishna is not okay. He's not picking up the call. Devashish Anita.
So, Maharaj, I'm trying the Pamela recorder, Maharaj, if it works.
Okay.
Maybe there can be double recording with other recorder if this new one doesn't work.
Or in case... You get disconnected. Govinda Charan. Do you have Govinda Charan?
Also, Gauchandra Prabhu came online.
Yes,
you can add him.
Yes, the Govinda Nandini says that he doesn't have phone. He says.
Okay.
Anyhow, I'll try to add him again. I told him you can listen. Govinda Charan, who is he? Oh, Gauchandra is online?
Yes, madam.
Okay, very good. Yesterday night I was talking to Gauchandra Prabhu and he was asking about you, Maharaji. So
yes, I had a chance to chat with him. Govinda Charam, are you there?
Haribol. Maharaji, Govinda Nandini cannot speak.
How is that? Govinda Nandini? Govinda Charam?
You want Govinda Charan also? Yeah, Maharaji, I'm adding him.
He's there. He's already added.
Maharaj, actually, you know, this recorder is working, Maharaj, it shows.
Yes, okay.
Okay, Maharaj.
Akshay Prabhu?
Yes, Maharaj.
Dhanyavaad, Prabhu. If you like, you can also record.
Yeah, I'm recording.
Haribol Govinda Charam. And then, in case Sushin has some difficulty with his connection. Haribol Govinda Charam.
Maharaj, you cannot speak.
Yes. Now you can hear? You
no,
can
no.
hear? Govinda Charam, you can hear? Yes? Okay. It means thumbs up. Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Thumbs up. That means okay.
Yes, Maharaj.
Any more, Prabhuji?
Hare Krishna. Dandatpanam, Gauchandra.
Gauchandra Prabhu, can you hear? Can you talk?
Hare Krishna, Gauchandra Prabhu.
Haribol. I have not seen Gauchandra in a long time online.
Yes,
six months, maybe 6 months or more.
No, Maharaj, not 6 months.
How
he
many?
Went in June, July, August, September.
August.
Please leave your message. Yes.
4 months.
When you
4 months. Feels like 6 months.
Yes. Now he will be online, Maharaj. He's taken internet connection and also laptop.
Yes, I know. I'm very happy.
Yes.
I want to speak with him again.
You talk
where
Maharaj
are we
Skype?
From? We are from all over the world. I am in USA. Krishna is also in, Shafran is also in USA. What does that mean? From
it's
Brazil. Oh. So yes, this is international satsang. Haribol. Mahaprabhu's mercy, Prabhupada's mercy.
we can have this international satsang. Mahaprabhu will be very happy. What is happening? Lord Chandra is writing something.
He's writing, Maharaj?
Maharaj, he doesn't have mic, Maharaji.
You don't have mic, but you have speaker? Okay.
He has got actually that laptop mic. He can try to speak it.
Yes, you can speak also from your microphone. No problem.
From laptop, you can speak, Maharaj, I think.
Yes.
With, you know, mic. I was talking with him yesterday.
I see. He just bought it. Okay.
If laptop has its own inbuilt, I think, Gauchanda Prabhu.
You can use the microphone in the computer.
Laptop itself it has.
Hare Krishna Dandas Maharaj.
Oh, there you are. Hare Bol.
Hare Krishna Dandas. We can hear you, Gauchanda Prabhu.
Missing your voice. Missing your sweet voice. very nice. Happy that you can join us again. Remember when you went there? I said, okay. You asked me if you should go there. I said, yes, you can go there, but you must keep in touch with the devotees. Remember? I asked you that.
Yes,
So we haven't heard from you in a long time now. We are able to hear you again. Now you must keep up your connection with us all, okay? We don't like when you're not here. How is your work going? Is it good?
But it is fine.
Going fine? You're happy with your work?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Good. It's good here.
Good. Good. Okay. And any good association there? No. Any?
Normal association.
Normal association. All right. Anyhow. Oops. What happened? Who dropped?
It was a Prem
Loda. Prem Loda. Where's Gauchandra? Gauchandra has also dropped.
Just a second.
Maharaj, which page number we should go, Maharaj, in that?
Page 46.
Okay, Maharaj. The creation, Maharaj?
Page 46. Yes. In the section on the creation. All right, let's begin now. It's already getting late. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Sri Mate Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namane Namaste Sarasati Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschuchade Satarane Om Ajnana Timirandasya Yananjana Salakaya Chakshurun Miritam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobishtam Shtapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kata Mayam Tati Swapadantikam Vanchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasadi Gaur Bhaktivrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Shri Shri Prabhupada ki jai, Gaur Bhaktivinoda ki jai. So, we are reading from the Subjective Evolution by Srila Sridhar Maharaj. And we will start from, as I said, page 40, what is that? 46. Actually, we'll start from page, because it's in the middle there, from the paragraph, we'll start from the previous paragraph on page 45. Everyone knows that, where it says, if the earth vanishes. We read this last time, I will read it again, so we can just catch the gist of what we've been talking about. So if the earth vanishes, it does not mean that the whole solar system will vanish. So Srila Maharaj is trying to explain how Goloka exists, the transcendental abode of the Lord. Goloka exists. Even with the annihilation of this universe, Goloka continues to exist because it is eternal and this material world is temporary. So he's explaining it by an analogy, that if the earth vanishes, the whole solar system will not vanish. Like that. In the same way, Goloka will be there. Even this earth planet or this universe vanishes, that does not mean that the Goloka will vanish, because it's bigger than this whole universe. So the solar system may remain, but the men on earth cannot see it any longer. Its influence on earth can no longer be felt. In a similar way, Goloka exists. It says Gokula here, but I think he means Goloka. In another plane, it exists in the finest plane of reality, is beyond the creation, beyond evolution and dissolution. Such subtle energy can be understood by analogy with ether. If the earth is destroyed, ether may not be destroyed. Meaning here is that ether is more subtle than earth. It's earth, water, fire, air, ether. So ether is more subtle, and the grosser elements may be destroyed, but the subtle elements can remain. Because in the creation, first ether comes, then the air and fire, water, and earth like that will follow from ether. So ether is within and also outside the earth, but with the dissolution of the earth, ether may not dissolve but continue to exist. And the position of Golok is something like that. This is confirmed in the Srimad Bhagavatam, second canto, ninth chapter, 35th verse. Yatha mahanti bhutani bhutesu chavacheshvanu pravishyantya pravishtani tathateshu nateshvaham. O Brahma, please know that the universal elements enter into the cosmos and at the same time do not enter into the cosmos. Similarly, I also exist within everything and at the same time I am outside of everything. Krishna's position is similar. He is there and not there. And Bhagavad Gita tells Arjuna, Maya tatam idam sarvam jagaravyakta murtina matstani sarva bhutani nachaham teshvavashtita nachad matstani bhutani pashyame yoga maishvaram bhuta brinnacha bhutasto mamata bhuta bhavana. I am everywhere and nowhere. Everything is in me, and yet nothing is in me. In my unmanifested form, this entire universe is pervaded. Behold my mystic opulence, my simultaneously oneness and difference. Although I am the maintainer of all living entities, and although I am everywhere, I am not implicated by any of this, for I am the very source of creation. So, can anyone give an example? How we can understand that something can be in everything and yet not that thing is itself independent of everything that is in? Can we think of anything?
Maharaj, once you were telling about Lord Brahma, he is actually creator. He seems to be within universe, but actually he is outside universe.
Any other?
Sky.
The sky. What about the sky? How is that example?
Everything within is within that sky.
Everything is in the sky?
Everything is... the whole planet is within the sky.
Huh? Oh, the space, you mean? Space. In the space.
Well, space or sky, I think. Okay.
Space is a good example. All the planets are within space. And space is also within the planets. Planets occupy space. Space is there inside. The planet has a certain space that makes up the planet, right? Every body, and all bodies are extended, have an extension, have a length, a breadth, a width. That's the spatial dimension. So everybody has a spatial dimension, but the space is there also in which the bodies are situated. Like that. That is a good example, space.
Maharaj, like Shvetadipa also is within the universe and at the same time outside the universe.
Okay. Mystical place called Shvetadvip. There is expansion of Mahavishnu. And yet Mahavishnu is also outside the universe because he is creating it all. And he enters into it. That's the mystical potency of the Mahavishnu. Any other?
But like Brahma is within the universe and at the same time it is more than the universe.
He is creating the universe, yes, and he is also. And therefore, as the creator, he is outside of it. Very good.
Maharaj, sky, like, you know, the space is, you know, getting all these planets and also it is not affected by the planets, Maharaj.
Yes, we said that already. Space.
Yes.
Any other example from our life, from the man position, human position? Do we have that power also to be within something and outside of something? When an artist makes a painting, right?
Yes, Madhu.
And that painting is what? It's the expression of the artist's thoughts, artist's ideas and feelings.
Yes, Madhu.
The painting embodies the feelings, the passion of the artist.
Yes, Madhu.
He puts his whole heart into that painting. I say that sometimes. He put his whole heart there. And yet the artist is different from the painting. It expresses what the feeling of the great artist will produce a great piece of art. Anyone can draw a picture. But what is the difference between our drawing a picture and a great artist when he draws a picture? That kind of quality of the feeling, of the ideas, imagination, that's all part of the artwork. And that comes from the artist and it goes into that painting and it makes it a great painting that can be appreciated by so many people. So it's different from just putting something on paper, on canvas, some paint on canvas. Anyone can put paint on canvas. But according to the qualification of the artist, and that will take on a different form because the quality of the artist will be there in the painting also. That's what makes it. That's what makes a great artist stand out. The artwork of a great artist stand out from the artwork of ordinary people. Right?
Yes, Maharaj.
I like that. There are so many examples of this that we can understand how this is a practical
Maharaj,
thing.
Maharaj, is it possible that, you know, poems also, like, you know, heart poems?
Poem, of course, everything. Any literature? Literature contains what?
Yes.
Literature contains the thought. The thought of the poet.
Yes,
the thought of the author is there in the physical. The thoughts of that person are there in the physical form.
Yes,
and, but that doesn't mean that the author is in that physical form.
Rabindranath Tagore has mentioned.
That particular book that has been written, that doesn't mean that's the same as the author. The author is in that, but he's not. That you can't say that book is the author. The author and the book are two different things.
Yes.
At the same time, it's the expression of the author that's found in that book.
Yes,
what does Rabindranath Tagore say?
Maharaj, actually, you know, he mentioned, you know, some book, you know, which is, you know, like very, in last stage, his feeling he has, you know, expressed in that book.
Okay.
So, you know, that book is inappreciated, but actually, exactly he's mentioning his, you know, feelings, Maharaj. He has some, you know, feelings. So his poem form he was expressing.
Yes. So then we have to understand the relationship between cause and effect. The cause and its effect are of different types. So they say the cause and the effect are, of course, is what is producing the effect is called the cause. And what is produced by the cause is called the effect. So these are two different things. Yet, you can't have the effect without the cause, and something can't be a cause unless it has an effect. So these two things are connected, but they're different. Right? Different type. One has to come before the other. The effect doesn't come before the cause. The cause has to come before the effect. So they're different in that way. At the same time, you can't have one without the other. So even the inner cause and the outer cause may have different positions. The body may be disturbed, but the mind may not be. Someone dropped. Someone dropped.
He's adding some people, so maybe some.
So the body, there's someone sleeping in here. You hear them in the background. But the mind may not. The mind may be disturbed, the soul may not be. But this, we are to understand, by this, we are to understand the difference between cause and effect, subtle and gross, matter and spirit. Mind may be disturbed, soul may not be. Like this. The soul is causing the mind to act. So, mind, soul is the cause, mind is the effect, something like that. So even though the mind may be disturbed, the effect may be disturbed, the soul may not be. Cause may enter into something and becomes, when it enters into that thing, it becomes distributed in so many different ways. Just like if one billiard ball hits another billiard ball, then all the billiard ball only hits the other one in one place. But that effect, that hitting, that spot where it hit, goes to all the molecules in the atom and the billiard ball. And the billiard ball that hit, all the atoms of that ball are affected. And so the whole ball moves, even though only one point has been touched. Something like that. So cause may be one thing, the effect is another, what happens can be distributed in different ways. So by this we are to understand the difference between cause and effect, subtle and gross, matter and spirit. Something like that. Then consciousness and evolution. Prakriti, the material nature, does not evolve consciousness like fossilism. 1 minute. Let me see if I can wake up the sleeping devotee.
My devotee is sleeping somewhere, Maharaj.
Okay. Prakriti, the material nature, does not evolve consciousness like fossilism. The material nature does not evolve consciousness. In other words, material nature is not the cause of consciousness. On the other hand, both are within consciousness. So there's no necessity of movement for the soul here. The soul is inactive, indifferent, passive in this enjoying plane. That is another original conception. The soul does not take its place in the negative side. It is meant for the positive side. By accepting that the soul is in the background, prakriti or material nature, the body works on its behalf. So the soul is in the background of prakriti. But the Prakriti is working on its own, on the behalf of the soul, is what he's saying here. Soul doesn't do the work. The body is working, but on behalf of the soul. It has its function. Actually, the function of the material body is what?
Positive action of the, you know, actually, the, you are telling, you know, mind is like negative and body is...
No, no, the body, what is the body doing for the soul? Why is the body, what is the material body doing for the soul, you know?
Material body, it's covering, Maharaj.
Covering?
It's covering no. The body.
How's it covering?
Maharaj, it's attachment, Maharaj, you know, consciousness is polluted. Attention is, you know, in...
The soul is the consciousness, but what is the body doing for the consciousness?
It is providing a means of movement for the body in the material world.
Not only the body, our soul can also move in its own way.
Exploiting, Maharaj, exploiting.
Exploiting, yes. That's right. Who's that? Who said that? What was that?
Maharaj,
that
I have said.
Susan Paul. Maharaj.
Are the body exploiting the soul?
Body is exploiting the material energy. It's working as the exploiting agent. It's working as the exploiting agent. Soul doesn't exploit. Body is exploiting. Soul wants to enjoy exploitation, experience exploitation, then it has a material body for that purpose. So the relationship between body and soul...
If there is no material body... Then one cannot move across the material world.
One can exploit.
One cannot perceive the material world with the only soul.
You don't need a material body if you're not exploiting. Material body means the external energy. You see? It's the external. External energy means one thing is there and then another thing is there. And to get anywhere, you have to take that. One thing has to work against another. That's called exploitation. One thing has to grab another. Because they're all separated from one another. External energy means everything is separate from one thing. Everything is separate from everything else. Okay. So in order to get anywhere in this world, to collect anything, you have to capture. One thing has to capture another. That's called exploitation. In the spiritual world, we don't have that external. That external conception is not there. Everything is internal.
What happens in the plane of renunciation?
Renunciation is indifference. Neither internal nor external. Just everything is merged together. It's one. In oneness, you can either exploit or dedicate. If everything is one, there's no question of exploitation, no external, and no internal either. Soul, the soul does not take its place in the negative side. It is meant for the positive side. But accepting that the soul is in the background, prakriti or material energy, the body works on its behalf. The relationship between body and soul is like the relationship between a minor and his false guardians. It is something like what happens when the proprietor of an estate is a minor and the managers take advantage of his youth to loot and enjoy the estate. The Buddha-jiva, soul, is the minor's position. The soul cannot control these revolting managers, the five senses. He need only have the contact of a major soul. With the help and guidance of the major soul, he can subdue his managers and gain mastery over his own property. A fallen soul's position is like a minor proprietor. He is helpless. He is doing nothing. The managers are doing everything using his own resources. They are doing everything in the name of the proprietor. The soul is inactive, non-cooperating, but the body, mind, intelligence, and false ego are working on behalf of the soul, the real ego, as if you were on their side. But if his real interest inside is roused by a major soul who is connected with Paramatma and with Bhagavan, then the soul will find his own field there. He'll control the senses and mind and utilize them in the service of the Lord. He'll say, everything is for Krishna, not for me. So, Krishna says, Sarva Dharmam Parityaja Mam Ekam Sharanam Raja. Give up all your duties and come to me. And your present duties, good or bad, whatever you can conceive from your present position, give up everything and come straight to me. I am everything to you. This is Krishna consciousness. Krishna is telling us, you belong to me, and you are my property, just as you can say that you are master of any property. So you are my property, my slave. This is the truth. And by accepting that truth, we will live in a higher plane. That we will be the gainer, and we will come into our normal position. At present, in an abnormal position, we are suffering from thinking, I am the master, the monarch of all I survey. That ego is our worst enemy if we are to progress in devotional service. And service to Krishna is of different varieties. There is service in general, and then there are services of particular type. Shantadasya, Sakya, Vatsalya, Madhurya. And then there are also divisions according to whether devotion is calculative or spontaneous. Calculative means what? Anyone know?
Calculative means like sadhana bhakti maharaj?
Gyan. Like gyan.
Gyan, definitely.
Because everything he has to conceive first before he does it. He has to work
My answer would be that I would say that calculative, as I understand, is that I will follow the rules and regulations of the shastra, and then I will become free from karma. This is good for me. So it is better that I do something for my life than go in the circle of birth and death. But spontaneous is not like that. It is also,
That is also gyan. That's gyan mishra bhakti. Calculative or sadhana bhakti, that's calculative. It's gyan mishra bhakti. Only shuddha bhakti is raganuga. Ragamart, spontaneous.
Spontaneous is more like
Shuddha
bhakti. Because of the inspiration of the
shastra. Yes. Not shastra. Somehow the rasa has been felt. Some relationship with Krishna. Personal relationship is there and it's based on that ragamart or spontaneous devotion.
Ragamart is before realizing rasa.
Huh? What's that?
Ragamart is before realizing rasa.
No. Ragamart means rasa, that there's some taste of rasa. Otherwise you can't have rock.
No, raganuga means also sadhana bhakti, and sadhana bhakti leads to
bhava. One can engage in sadhana bhakti and ragamart. That's possible also. But ragamart is generally considered being controlled by rasa, part of rasa tattva.
This is bhava bhakti.
From my understanding.
Maharaj, actually, you know, some Ragamarga devotees may come to preach and they follow maybe sadhana, you know, bhakti maharaj, to preach to general public maharaj.
That's another thing. But there are two types of sadhana bhakti. One is sadhana bhakti that is not based on rag. And then there is another kind of raganuga sadhana bhakti also is there.
Yes.
Who has the taste of engaging in spontaneous service through the devotional practices. They're following the devotional principles. They have a taste. They're not just doing it out of duty. In other words,
yes.
Sadhana bhakti means that is my duty. I must get up. I must do this. I must do that. But there's raganuga sadhana bhakti in which I want to do this. Like for instance, who is doing the puja, deity worship? There are two types.
Like Haridas Thakur.
One who is doing that out of necessity, and the other who's doing that out of inner need, inner necessity. One who's doing that because he knows that is my tradition, and I must do that. Another who is doing that because he has a taste, or he's feeling some pleasure in serving the Lord in that way. They're doing it through offering incense and things like that. He feels some happiness in doing that, and he can't put that down. They can't stop that activity. So there is a hierarchy in the development of devotional condition in this way. The highest development is Uchula Ras. Okay, good. Then Utfala Ras means superfine, the brightest surpassing all, where we find Krishna in consorthood without any consideration of any law. Autocratic consorthood. And this particular nature and behavior is described in a book written by Rupa Goswami titled Utfala Nilamani. The first part of devotion is given in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. In that book, from the very beginning of an ordinary civilized religious life, Rupa Goswami takes us up to different devotional relationships, Shanta, Yasya, Sakya, Vatsalya, and Madhurya. But the details of Madhurya Ras, the highest relationship with Krishna, has been described by Rupa Goswami in Utfala Nilamani. Nilamani, Krishna, in his highest luster, Utfala. Nilamani in consorthood. And what are Krishna's characteristics? How does he play with his paraphernalia in the Madhurya Ras? That has been described in the detail of Utfala Nilamani. Of course, we have been cautioned that we are not to read that book from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. He doesn't like that the devotees should read that book. Anyhow, we can know what is in there. It doesn't have to be hidden from us. But to read that book, if we are not prepared to come up to the high platform, then the danger is that we will get a misconception, have some kind of mundanely tainted idea of those things, and then we will become fallen from reading such high topics, dealing with the intimate affairs between Radha and Krishna. If we bring our mundane conceptions to that plane, without having come to the purely transcendental platform, then it can actually be of danger, of an obstacle on the path of our devotion. So better than to do that, what is spontaneous, let that come of its own nature. There's a meaning of spontaneous. What is spontaneous does not have to be practiced. It will come of its own nature. Anyhow, even the greatest literary scholars are dumbfounded to find how divine love has been analyzed so finely and elaborately in this book of Rupa Goswami. Subtle points have been analyzed, organized, and distributed in that book, and the great scholars become dumbfounded when they come to such statements. As Bhagavatam says, Muhyanti yat suraiha. In the introduction, Bhagavatam gives this warning, this caution to the scholars. You will all be dumbfounded when you attempt to come to this plane. Scholarship will not allow you to flourish there. The nature of that plane is so mysterious that even great scholars won't be considered fit to enter there. Only the surrendered souls can understand and feel these subtle points of devotion. Outsiders who remain objective inquirers and researchers can't have any entrance here. It is superior subjective realm, the super subjective realm, that plane is above, even the plane of soul. Sometimes you may have experience actually of meeting a scholar who is studying the Chaitanya cult, as they call it, the cult of devotion. And they study in a very scholarly way. And if you hear those people speak about those things, you want to run away. because they're so dry, taking such high topics and speaking in such a dry way about those things that you don't like even hear them. Especially
in Bengali.
Heard a devotee speaking, then it becomes even more detestable when these scholars try to talk about those things. What's that?
Maharaj, in Bengal, Maharaj, yes, Maharaj, in Bengal, it is generally seen that, you know, this type of, you know, scholars, you know, also, you know, they sing those, you know, things in public.
Who want to get some admiration from the public. They're saying, oh, he is such a high devotee. And they're getting some admiration from the public like that. That is also very disgusting to hear from such persons about those things. We don't like that. Therefore, we rather prefer that no one should talk about those things. Let that become some automatically inspired within the heart of a devotee. He will automatically feel all those things. By pleasing Krishna, Krishna will reveal all those things within his heart. That is a better way. That is the real way of understanding those things. Don't try to just artificially oppose yourself as a high advanced devotee and all those things and spoil the whole thing for yourself and for others. Let that arise spontaneously. Put that Prabhupada told, Pujala Raghupati Gaurava Pancha. That Pujala means let us worship that. Huh? Let us worship that Raghava, that Raghamar. We worship that, hold that over our head. And we bow down before that. And if that wants to descend to us, it will do so in its own will, its own time. And that will be the real thing. We will not be able to avoid but going into that plane when it becomes a real thing. Even we may resist, oh no, I'm not fit for that plane, still it will come to force us there. That will be the real thing. We trust that more than this other thing. And even when it's forced to that position, still he thinks, no, I'm not worthy of that. That is a real bhakta, pure bhakta. So that plane is above even the soul. Only surrender souls can understand and feel these subtle points of devotion. Outsiders who remain objective inquirers and researchers can't have any entrance here. It is a superior subjective realm. The super subjective realm, that plane is above even the plane of soul. So, and to understand this, we must first inquire about the soul. First there is mind, mana, then intelligence, buddhi, then soul, atma. The soul is evergreen. It does not die. The soul is eternal or constant. It is said in the Upanishads and in the Gita, if once we can meet our soul, then a diametrical change comes in our life. At that time, we will be astonished to realize, oh, such a highly qualified thing is here within me. In ignorance, I was considering that this perishable body and this flickering mind was my true self. But the material senses and mind are all trespassers. They have some inimical tendency towards my true self. I am soul. I have no necessity of all these things. Without these unnecessary material things, I can live. No food is necessary for the soul in the jurisdiction of this material plane. The soul is independent. What a wonderful existence I have. In reality, I am a soul, and the nature of soul is so noble, so high, so good. A diametrical change of consciousness comes at this point. No one tries to enter into that higher realm. Spiritual reality is what is necessary for us. We are soul. We are independent of matter. We are made of such transcendental existence. Nothing can threaten the soul's existence, not the atomic bomb, nuclear war, lightning, thunder, or earthquakes. All the troubles of this material world are limited to this body, which is a foreign carcass, a concocted representation of my true self. My true self exists on the spiritual plane on a higher level. If we can really have a touch of that realization, a glimpse of our own identity, if we can feel within that the soul is independent of matter, then a revolutionary change will take place within our minds. Then our attempt to progress in spiritual life becomes quite genuine. Otherwise, our progress is suspicious and doubtful. We grasp it intellectually and think, yes, let me try. I am hearing, of course, that I have a good prospect in spiritual life. By my intelligence, I can follow something. Well, let me try. But progress on the intellectual plane is only hesitating progress. When one comes to the plane of one's own soul, however, one will find oneself and realize, here I am. At that time, all false conceptions which have been held for so long will vanish like a dream. They will all be finished, and one will think, I am to start a new life. And the new prospect will open to make progress in that higher plane. Oh, so very nice. Srila Maharaj is speaking here about the soul realization. So realization means a new life, a new birth, a new way of thinking, a new way of feeling, a new way of understanding reality, a new reality, a revolution.
Atata Brahma Jigyasa.
Brahma Jigyasa. That is real Brahma, real spiritual realization. Soul is nearby. We can try to find out what the soul is if we can eliminate the material elements. This is the process of the Upanishads. And it's mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita, Indriyani Paranyahur. First, we are to understand that our senses are primary. If my senses are removed, the entire world of our experience is nothing to me. Only through my senses can I be aware of the existence of the outside world. Minus senses, eyes, ears, no world is apparent to me. Then, above the senses is the mind. what is the mind? Well, first of all, let me say, make some comment here. Very nice point, Jita Maharaj is making. The world outside me is what? How is the world outside me known? By the senses.
By the senses.
We were talking about this the other day. That if I could not, if my eye could not see, my eye is only capable of seeing the visible spectrum. There's called the electromagnetic spectrum. The eye, according to the scientists, is perceiving electromagnetic waves. Can capture electromagnetic waves coming from the outside universe. So this is what their theory is. We don't believe this, but anyhow, this is what they say. And my eye, in the eye, according to the scientists, there are some receptors, and they are capturing the electromagnetic radiation that's coming from the outer object. And from that captured image inside the eye, inside the brain, then we are making some statement about the outer world, the outer object. However, if you put on some kind of glasses or there's some deficiency in the eye, it won't be able to see the visible light. Sometimes you can see the microwave radiation if the eye is deformed in some way, if something is remaining there, maybe some microwave detector can be put there in the eye and you will be able to see microwave. That whole world will change. If we had microwave vision, it would be different from the visual vision that we have now. Microwave, they use microwaves to see far out into the universe nowadays. Okay? They have microwave, what do they call that? Is it microwave at all? I think so. Microwave telescopes. You may see them sometimes, they look like a big horn. And from those microwave, because microwave is very small, it can travel long distances. Very small amplitude, or small wavelength rather, it can travel great distances. And so that, so they can see very long, very far out into the universe. Right now, we can't see very far at all with visible light. Visible light is medium wavelength. And then long wavelength is called infrared. So depending on the visuals, depending on the electromagnetic spectrum that we can observe, we determine the universe in that particular way. But who's to say that the universe is that way that we're perceiving it? Rather, the way we're perceiving it is what the world is, what we consider the world to be. You see? Understand? The world is what we are perceiving the world. That is what we say the world is. How we are perceiving it, that's how we say it is. But who is to say that it is actually like that? If we took away the senses, what could we say about how the world is? Well, we wouldn't be able to. So the whole thing is coming from us, not from the world. This is the point that is being made here.
No, but only from the sense of the...
Huh? What's that?
From the sense observations, Maharaj.
What's that?
From the sense observation, we are making our own world, Maharaj.
The senses are determining what the world is like. From our senses. Mm-hmm. Scientists don't know this, but it's common sense. If our senses mm-hmm. were different, if we can function differently, then we would see a different world, no?
Yes, Maharaj.
We would not be able to see the sun, even if we had microwave vision. We wouldn't see the same thing that we are seeing now, as we call the sun. We see something totally different. And we say, okay, the world is like that. Okay. So... it's a very subtle thing, yet this is the actual fact, this is the actual truth, that our senses are determining our world, not the other way around. Then from the senses, we have to go, there's another plate, that's called the mind. Then what is the mind? Mind deals with acceptance and rejection, sankalpa vikalpa. In other words, the mind thinks, I want this, I don't want that. It deals with attachment and hatred. The mind determines who is enemy, who is friend. This is mine, that's yours. If we want to understand the mind, we have to look within, to inquire within. What is that element in me that seeks friends and avoids enemies? Where is he? Sometimes the mind is apparent, and then other times he is hiding. I must find out where the mind exists, what that substance it is composed of. By analysis, I can understand what aspect of my inner self is the mind, then having some idea of what the mind is, I may analyze that part of me, which deals with reason, the intelligence, and then where is the intelligence? So here, now we have to consider the second point. So first, we understand that the world is determined by the senses. And then we have to realize that beyond the senses, which means like a passive kind of reception of the world, there's another active partitioning of the world, not mind, that I want this, I don't want that. This is my enemy, this is my friend. How much trouble that's causing in the world. By seeing the world like that, mind is seeing the world. Mind is involved in the world by making the world into these different things. This is Muslim, this is Christian, this is Hindu. What is causing? What is happening? So many fighting, terrorism, all these things are coming in the world. So the world is being formed by the mind. How we see the world, that is the mental component that's acting. Senses, determining what is out there, what we think is out there. Mind is also determining what we think is there. And mind's business is to create distinctions. I want, I don't want. What is favorable, what is not favorable. Huh? Party spirit, all these things is coming from that. I am America and I am this. Even the Christians, they're having, fighting one another in Ireland. Protestants thinking, well, we're Protestants. Catholics are thinking, no, we're different. They're both worshiping Jesus Christ. And still they think, no, I'm Protestant and he is Catholic. We don't want to work together with them. Okay? Like that. What's going on by the mind? Then above the mind, there is reason and then the intelligence. Reason and intelligence. Sridhar is making some kind of identification between reason and intelligence, depending on what philosopher you read. They may use different terms here. But basically, what is intelligence? How does that differ from the mind? And anyhow, here's the explanation. When the mind demands something, the intelligence says, don't take that, don't eat that. By introspection, I may look within to find out what is that principle in me which reasons. What is that finer thing? The fine thing, what is its nature, its substance, its existence? We shall try to find our introspection, find out substantially. If that is possible, then the next step will take us to the soul. So, okay, well, we talked about mind. Now, the intelligence, mind is making distinction. Intelligence is saying, what is the benefit of that? Huh? If I do this, then what will happen? What is the consequence? If I like ice cream, but if I eat too much ice cream, I get bellyache. So I said, no, at some point I said, stop eating at all, or I get too fat. So intelligence says, no, you may like that, but if we do this, some bad thing will happen. A little bit more than the mind is the intelligence, a little higher faculty. So we have to understand all these things that are working within us. We don't just blindly accept what is there on the surface. We have to look deeper into the situation, deep within ourselves. Srila Mars is famous for saying, dive deep into reality. This is the meaning. Don't just accept the superficial thing that is there. Try to understand where it's coming from. What is the inner meaning of it? So like that, senses, mind, intelligence. Then from the intelligence, the higher platform that is making some decisions about the mind's decisions, mind's distinctions, and that is not enough simply to make distinction this or that, what I want, what I don't want, but what is the benefit of that intelligence? Then what higher principle is at work beyond the intelligence? That is the soul. Then what is that soul which makes possible the intelligence, the reason by which we act, which prompts the mind to want and also gives our senses the power to connect with things? What is that spark of knowledge? Where is that soul within me? What position does it hold? I want to see it face to face. Then, in this way, we can evaporate like lightning all the misconceptions of body and mind. By finding the soul through introspection, we may experience the lightning touch of realization. So, I think we'll stop there. Now, 8:30. Any have any questions? Is all clear?
Maharaj, some kirtan is going on. SL, I want to ask some text chat, Maharaj.
I wanted to also ask Maharaji.
Yes?
Maharaji,
what's your question?
Yeah, Maharaji, as you know that I and I belong to Mumbai. Recently, I have seen these attacks. So many people have died. It so happened that one of the terrorists was caught live. And
I can't hear you. What are you saying?
Can you hear me, Maharaji? Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can hear you now. I can hear you.
Yes, Maharaji.
Go ahead.
I was saying that even I'm from Mumbai, and even this terrorist attacks which happened this time, moved me to. What happened very strange is that one of the terrorists was caught live by the police. He, first of all, he pretended that he died. When he saw his fellow terrorist dead in the hospital when they were taken by the police, he lost his courage, and the police later realized that he's also alive. The terrorist then pleaded guilty, and you know, he was crying foul. He was shouting that, please protect me. I don't want to be killed. I don't want to, I want to live. Doctor, please put me on saline. That's what he said. I wanted to ask you, Maharaji, when that person can kill so many people, and when ultimately death arises at his place, he realizes an identity, what everyone has, that everyone wants to live, everyone wants to see the life. So at that moment when he did those things, why didn't he have that realization? As you were saying about perception, and many people are get engaged themselves with the perceptions that they have, and then they go to fight. What is that actually causing them to drive mad?
Okay, I understand your question. And this is called Maya. Maya means there are two functions of Maya. One is called the throwing potency, and the other is the covering potency. The throwing energy and the covering energy, two functions of Maya. So those who are entangled in Maya, in the Maya conception, is very hard to understand anything other than I only want to live. Don't kill me. Because they are covered by the material conception of life, they don't know that there's anything beyond the material conception of life. Even though they're asking, I want to live, they're thinking, I want my body to be okay. They're not thinking anything about the self, actually. Although the self is what is calling out, let me be saved. Really, the whole mind, the whole thinking process is absorbed in the body, in the covering. Already, because throwing potency of the Maya, throwing potency means that the soul is thrown out into the external energy and identifies with the body. That's the throwing. Then by the activities of the body, with so many parents and friends and job and all those things that come from the body and the things that the body does, going to the cinema and going out to eat, you know, and going to see this place and that place, all those activities further cover the living entity. As soon as he identifies with the body, he becomes involved in all those other things. And he thinks that is his real home in the material world. And like that, by that kind of bewilderment, he forgets completely about the soul. And even though he's calling for his life, he doesn't realize that it's only ignorance, because body, everybody's going to die. It's the nature of the body to die. Then what's the problem? Right? Body must die eventually. So what is calling out for life? He doesn't know that. This is the covering of Maya. Is it clear?
Yes, Maharaji, but he was very animalistic in behavior with other souls. And when that situation arised upon him, he was covered. So why does man realize that he's struggling for life at such moments? Why doesn't he realize that at extreme moments when he's very passionate to kill and hurt others?
Like I said, he is only thinking on the material plane, and they have no spiritual knowledge. So then he has no opportunity to think of those things. Just like, let's say, what kind of example can we give?
Manaji, but also these people were...